The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they're easy, but
we
because they are hard.
We have made our start. 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to our Sunday program. This is the last Sunday in June, which means our year is more than half over. Can you absolutely believe that? And what a year. Maybe that'll be the subject of a show later on. What a year. But we're glad that you're here with us, and this is Open Line, so it's really your show. And a couple of quick announcements first. The only show we're having in the coming week is Rod Pyle and Dr. Tony Postian, and this is a National Space Society program about their day in space coming up in July, and also a glimpse at ISDC 2021 in Los Angeles. And then we're off the rest of the week through the weekend because of the July 4th holiday. And then we resume on Tuesday the 7th, and that first guest on the 7th is Bob Zimmerman. He is back with us. So that is our schedule. It's a very short week next year. Next week, including no Hotel Mars, no Friday, no Sunday program. And we hope everyone does have a great and very, very safe July 4th holiday weekend. And a couple of other quick things to announce. We are in the process of migrating the main system that runs our space show, which is Drupal 7, to Drupal 8. This is not a small deal. This is like remaking the website from scratch almost. So it's complicated, and it goes through a lot of processes, not a seamless migration. And if you notice things not working on our website, I really need you to send me an email and tell me what's not working, because we may be overlooking it or not seeing it, and you're going to be a great source of eyes and ears for us to point out things that are not working or that you believe are not working, so that we can make sure that they're fixed and they get over to Drupal 8 without a problem. This is probably going to be going on for a couple of weeks. You'll hear me make this announcement several more times, and I appreciate your assist in this process. It won't be unusual if something doesn't work, but please call it to my attention. Don't assume that we know it's not working. And I really, really appreciate that. Open lines, there's a lot of things we can talk about, but this is really your show. Topics that you like to talk about for the most part. We do have a caller on hold, but let me give out the rest of the website information. The toll-free line is 866-687-7223. Email drspace, drspace at thespaceshow.com. You can get Space Show logo wear, don't forget, by going to our Cafe Press store, and that is Pepper's picture taking you right there. Hopefully you'll find some items of interest. And do remember, you can quickly download our programs as an archive off of the website, or listen right off of the website, and you can use most any podcast player for Android or Apple, if you want to listen to podcasts. If you have podcasting questions, please let me know, or recommendations, also let me know. The same is true for guest recommendations. And I really do appreciate those of you who have been sending me guest recommendations. So many are coming in. I'm actually behind a little bit, but I have them all documented in a big list, and will be working my way through them. And I'm very grateful to you. And I will let you know if and when one of your recommendations is coming on the Space Show. And hopefully they all will, but we will see about that. Don't forget, we're a listener-funded program, meaning that you, the listener, support us and keep our shows going. We're a nonprofit 501c3 with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. Your contributions are fully tax deductible if you pay federal income tax. The same is true if you're a California taxpayer. The best way to support us is with PayPal, and you'll see a very large PayPal button on the top of our homepage. And as I said, that's the quickest and easiest way. For those of you who do want to use checks, it is made payable to One Giant Leap Foundation, and you mail to Box 95, Tiburon, T-I-B-U-R-O-N, California, 94920. And for those of you continuing to support us during this COVID and economic shutdown crisis, we super-duper appreciate you. We know these are challenging economic times for many out there, myself included. And the fact that you're still supporting us during all of this time means an awful lot, and we certainly do appreciate it. And it certainly is welcome and needed. As this is a 90-minute show, we will talk about our sponsors when we break between first and second segment. But right now, I want to spend time talking, and we've had a guest on hold. He has other things that he has to do, so we arranged for him to be our first caller today. And Robert Jacobson is back with us. He was on the program with his book about two and a half weeks ago, and Robert had a great giveaway program for that book for both the live show and the archive listener show, and he can report on that giveaway. But I can tell you it has been the single most successful book giveaway program in the space show history. There has not been another author's book giveaway program that even comes close to the success that Robert Soffer has had with his book. Robert, welcome back to the program. How are you today, this Sunday?
Hi, good afternoon, David. I'm great. Good to speak today, and thank you so much for putting me at the top of the show here today. And I have a question, David. When you refer to in your store Pepper, is that a little tribute to your dog?
Absolutely. Pepper's a space cadet dog. She goes out and looks at the moon and Mars and other planets and things when things are interesting. I don't know what she sees, but she does look up, and she comes in and listens to most of the shows sitting at my feet. And regular listeners know that the Space Show is an extremely animal and pet-friendly program, especially for dogs, but all pets. And we don't even care if dogs are barking in the background with a guest on the line. They're welcome to voice their opinions, too. So Pepper is my husky, and I'm using her picture to escort listeners into the Space Show store, which is hosted by Cafe Press.
Fantastic. My wife reminded me that when I was on your show on, I think it was June 12th, that someone had asked, I think you had asked me about what was going on, how I was dealing with the pandemic and what it looked like locally. And I forgot to add something really major, is that we adopted two pets, rescue pets, which I want to encourage. It's a great thing to do during this time. And one of them we named, they're two cats. It was a mother cat and a kitten. And the kitten we've named Luna. And an interesting thing occurred last night. We were watching an excellent new documentary on Hubble. I think it was produced by BBC. I think it just came out in May or June. It even has some fresh images from Hubble. And as we were watching this hour-long documentary, somewhere near, I would say, the halfway point, the kitten came up to join us. We were watching essentially on a laptop on our bed, propped up on a cushion, and the kitten just started watching very intensely. It was was just super fascinated by the images from Hubble and a few of the interviewees on there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, pets can surprise us in many ways. I have lots of listeners that are doing the late night show in their time zone, and their cats or dogs are in bed with them, and they're sitting up in bed doing the show. A lot of people say, why don't you do Zoom? Get Zoom. Do this. And I say, because, you know, listeners are at home, And, you know, they don't want to be dressed up for Zoom. You know, for all I know, they're in bed in their PJs, or if it's hot, they're wearing a swimsuit or something. The last thing they want to do is be seen visually. So the fact that they can just do a show with audio only and who the hell knows what's going on in the background, they're really cool with that. And so Zoom doesn't really work for a live broadcast format. So that's cool that you're breaking your cats in early to be space cadet cats.
Absolutely. And, you know, the moon is quite popular, and Luna is quite popular in our household, and we're going to be looking forward to having her for many years, making her a bona fide space kitty.
Well,
and
has she read your book yet? That's the key thing. Has she gone through your book yet?
She has not, but I have a great photo with her and Jerry O'Neill's book. So I have a photo.
She wants to go on orbit. Cool for her.
She wants to go on orbit, but not. But we'll have to get a photo with my book at some point.
That's right.
So it was super great participating in the having the your listeners participate in the both live and the archive show giveaway. There were even a couple people whose names I'd heard of who reached out, and there were a lot of new names, and I want to encourage people to, you know, continue to support the space show where they can, and even just this giveaway was just a little something that I thought I could do to continue to bring further attention to your work, David, because I do still think that just the audio only medium allows for concerted, you know, good concentration to listening to someone sharing a view, a story. And as much as, you know, I love video too, there's nothing like just capturing a great two voices speaking. I think it's still a very viable format.
Well, the other thing is people do the show many times from their office. In fact, I've got two major space corporation shows coming up in early July. They've written papers. I don't want to say the name of the corporation, but they don't permit their people to put software or link to software for video unless it's their official webcast or video coming from their corporation. And they have IT departments, and you can't touch the computers in your office with anything other than to do the work you do. You have to have the IT department come up and take care of everything. They handle security and protection and uploading of software and fixing glitches and this and that, because they don't want downtime, and they don't want people screwing things up, and they don't want people hacking things. So, again, to people who always say you need to be doing video, most of the businesses and the corporations don't let their people do consumer-grade kind of video from their business computers, and most of them don't have a personal computer while they're at work, and which would then use their business internet or Wi-Fi, you know, network. So audio works great, and, you know, everyone knows video's out there, but there's still a great place for audio. You told me before the show was starting you're extending your book offer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I would. I would love to be able to make more listeners aware of the book. I kind of believe in the space show, and it's my gift to listeners for David's rules that he will share. That we're going to make some. We have digital copies available. The printed ones from the offer on June 12th. That has expired. We've kind of run out there, but we are making digital ebook copies available for those who will participate according to you know, some of the guidelines that David will share today. And that's easy to facilitate. We just essentially we'll need your name and email, but David will help share later how one can participate that. And it would, you know, once you read the book or any section of it, would love to have a review, completely objective. I'm happy to take positive and negative reviews, and I think you'll enjoy and find a lot of positive aspects of the book. And I will do my best to read every review as I try to hone my own craft.
So, listeners, the ebook offer for the live show that we're doing now is only applicable to callers. If you send in an email, doesn't count. You have to call on the toll-free line, and then you're eligible to get the ebook. For those of you listening on the archive show, obviously there's no call-in, but there will be a new code that I embed somewhere in today's program that you will have to repeat these words to tell us you want the ebook, and then I will introduce you to Robert. So what we did last time around was we had a three-word, really simple code, and all you did was email that code in the subject line or in the text of your email, and I sent your email on to Robert. And I mean, it's that simple. But the archive listeners will have a new code, and I will say it out loud on today's show later in the show. That's because we want you to listen to the program, not just ask for the book. So look for the new code. It will not be the same as from June 12th. But today, if you're a caller, then I will put you in touch with Robert. You can send me an email after you've called so I can forward your email address to Robert. Robert, anything you want to highlight in the book for today or in the Space News community?
Certainly. You know, I should probably share the title for those who didn't listen to the episode on June 12th. And the title is Space is Open for Business, the Industry that Can Transform Humanity. To learn a little more about the book, the URL is spaceisopenforbusiness.com. I also have an excerpt available at my personal site at robertjacobson.com. Also, I think there's an excerpt for sale online through a blockchain-enabled platform called blockchain.ca out of Canada. You can find a there's a chapter there. So I got a share on from social media from a friend today about an economic advisor, Peter Navarro. He was being interviewed on TV, and he was discussing about space being the fourth industrial revolution. And he described what we're going through right now as kind of structural headwinds. You know, maybe it's a polite way of saying we're going through a really messy time right now. But he recognizes that space is an important part for our global economy to thrive. And you know, that fourth industrial revolution includes things like data, IoT, AI, machine learning, quantum, biotech, nanotechnology, which all can have uses in space, as well as be informed by space. So I thought it was kind of interesting and timely to see that on the news this morning.
Did you send Peter a copy of your book?
I'm going to. His co-author, Dr. Greg Autry, actually provided a really nice endorsement for the book, and I probably will ask see if I can get a copy sent to the White House. I know that they've been very busy with the pandemic, so I didn't ask for that type of favor. I did send a few copies to people at the White House OSTP office and the Space Council. I've not heard back yet if they were received, but I did send a few copies there.
Well, Greg would have been who I suggested you go to get to Peter. So hopefully Greg can get him an ebook or a hard copy book. I think Peter would find it valuable.
Yeah, and I would be interested to even hear, you know, what the opposition, what their plans around a new space economy includes for those, you know,
Well, I have a recommendation for you on that too. Be bold, Robert, and send a copy to Elizabeth Warren, because I'm understanding in the news that should Mr. Biden win the presidency, Elizabeth Warren may very well be the next Treasury Secretary, or if she stays in the Senate, play a huge role in shaping the Biden administration economy. Now, say what you may about whether you like or don't like Elizabeth Warren. That's not the point of my comments. But if she is going to be in that kind of position, you might as well send her the book, and hopefully she'll open it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I will work on that. Thank you for the suggestion.
I mean, I don't have any connections to her, but maybe someone does, but hey, put it in the hands of the other side from your perspective, and maybe they'll ask you some questions and show some interest.
Yeah, that would be great. But I certainly didn't want to monopolize the open caller line today. Thank you so much for
You told me there's a special birthday today.
Oh, yeah.
And you're forgetting that.
I am forgetting. So today, apparently, is Elon Musk's birthday. I'm a June birthday as well.
So am I. I'm a June 4th birthday. So.
Oh, awesome. Happy belated birthday, David.
You too. What day is your birthday?
I'm the 19th.
Okay, well, that's a historic day, as we've all learned now. So happy birthday to you, too.
Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, I don't know what Elon's doing, but I know he's got a newborn, so that's probably that and his myriad of businesses are probably keeping him a little bit busy.
Does he have a dog?
Does Elon have a dog? I have no idea.
So if anyone out there knows if Elon has a pet other than a four-legged pet, let me put it that way, I'd like to know that. I'd like to know if he has a dog or a cat or maybe even something more exotic. But I'm just curious.
Speaking of animals, David, I was talking to our friend Dr. Armanellis yesterday about some of the videos of cats on parabolic flights, and Armin informed me that I think the late Owen Garriott was on some of the flights when they had taken a cat in a parabolic flight. I thought that the Russians maybe had done it as well. If there's any callers or listeners who can provide a little more feedback or data on that, and I was just kind of thinking about, like, you know, cats are just watching our two new cats. They're just amazing climbers and jumpers, and what would happen if you just remove gravity? I'm sure, you know, they'll keep their head on target, but realizing that, you know, they're not going to be able to get to where to their target. I kind of wonder what that's going to do to them. Is it just going to create panic in them? Are they ever going to be? Would they ever be able to get relaxed in a microgravity environment?
Who knows? I don't know if a dog would either. But there have been dogs in space that we know about. So,
but they were strapped in. They weren't.
They couldn't roam the space capsule. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Robert. You know, check in and let us know how the book is going. And again, callers today, you get an ebook. And if you are an archive listener, listen for my 3-word code later in the show. And then you too, if you email and say that magic word, like Jimmy Durante used to do, you get the magic word, you win $100. And a duck would come down from the ceiling and quack or something.
Yeah.
I can't give you the duck, but you'll get the book from Robert. So, Robert, have a great July 4th holiday coming up. And I know you live in the land of the crazies down there, and the virus is pretty active. So stay well and stay safe.
Thank you, David. I will. And you do as well. Thanks for having me again.
Always a pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Listeners, Robert has cleared our line. If you would like to call us, and if you would like to get Robert's ebook, which really is exceptional, and as I said, it's the best book offer I've ever done on the Space Show, the most successful book offer, I should say, I've ever done on the Space Show. So if you want to be part of that, call us, 1-866-687-7223. And there are a couple of things that have been going on out there that we can talk about, and while we wait and see if anybody wants to call, wants to get the book, wants to participate with us today, and I really hope that you do. The Senate is trying to get to the bottom of unidentified aerial phenomena. So I'm sure most of you have heard about the Senate's activity over the last 7 to 10 days, demanding all this classified information. Does anyone think any of that's going to lead to anything? Are we going to get truth? Are we going to find out what's really going on with unidentified aerial phenomena? I say no. It won't amount to anything. That's my take on it, but maybe some of you have a different take. But it has been an official Senate request now. So we will see what happens. I also do not think it will be a topic for the upcoming presidential campaign. We do have a caller. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Marshall. I'm back in Renfro.
All right.
And you brought the topic up, so I'm going to bite.
Okay. Wait a minute. I'm going to introduce you by email to Robert, and then you work out the details for the e-book, okay?
Oh, okay.
Okay. The topic of what, the Senate in their UFO request?
Yes. You've never asked me about TikTok, so I resisted the topic.
Well, you could have joined in any of the discussions. You didn't have to have an invitation.
Well, I know. But due to my...
Marshall, what happened? Are you there? Well, that's good. That was a long-lasting phone call. I know he's on a cell phone. Marshall, what happened? Are you there, Marshall? Okay, Marshall, if you can hear me, call me back. We lost you. Listeners, hopefully Marshall will call us back, and we'll get him back on the air just as soon as possible. Maybe his cell phone died. That sounded pretty screechy. If not, maybe he'll just send us an email. 1-866-687-7223. The line is available for anyone who wants to give us a call, and we do hope that we hear from you. So there is that topic that I was suggested that prompted Marshall's call. Not sure if Marshall's going to be able to get back to us. It sounded like something died. Well, let's see if this is Marshall. Marshall, is this you calling back?
Yes.
What happened?
I have no idea what happened.
I think Tic Tac revenge on Marshall.
Okay, I'll accept that guilty plea. Anyway, as I was starting to say, the military high command on a regular basis does tests of their pilots to make sure that they can handle totally obscure, weird, out-of-bounds concepts that pop up from time to time. It is part of the game of war to cause deception in the enemy. And they test the pilots to make sure that, hey, when they see something weird, they report it correctly. And I'm quite sure that the U.S. High Command does this on a regular basis. It's, you know, training. Along with testing the pilots, you are testing the officers that the pilots answer to, because those officers have to record and collect all the data about the anomaly and then in turn send it up to high command. And every once in a great while, there's a leak, which also the high command wants to make sure that there are no leaks, or the leaks that do happen are basically approved by them. So, gee, the Congress coming out there and wanting to do these big, surveys of UFO this and UFO that, gee, that jumps into preparedness of our military and causes... them to basically confess up to maybe a little hocus-pocus that high command was doing on the officers to find out who are the good officers and who should get promoted and who can handle the paperwork.
Well, if your theory is correct, how do you explain the documented maneuverability characteristics that can't be reproduced by anything here on Earth, and that's been attested to by lots and lots and lots of people, including the pilots? So that would imply that they're throwing super-duper black box technology that the Navy or the DOD or DARPA or somebody have to test them if they've got aerial phenomena craft that can move like that, because we don't have anything that any known physics that we have can approximate what Tic Tac does.
I agree. And that is what high command wants the pilots to see is the impossible, and they want them to accurately report it. That doesn't mean that somebody couldn't have gone into, it was a Navy plane, an F-18, and reprogrammed, put in a black box routine, basically to produce the phenomena in their radar.
Well, they'd have to do that on the Princeton, too, because remember, the Princeton guided them to intercept.
Yes, that's true. And Princeton, basically, you can have the top secret, hey, this is an exercise, and tell one of the officers in charge of the radar unit, tell the pilots this.
And the other end of it is that they claim that combat pilots in Afghanistan, in the Middle East over the years, have seen the same thing, and it has been reported. So if you make the assumption that people aren't lying about what they're seeing, and they are truthful reports, then there's an awful lot of monkey business, even in a combat zone, with radar, per your assumption.
Yeah.
Which is almost as hard to believe in a combat zone as the fact that they're from Zeta Reticuli. Who the hell knows where they're from?
Yeah. Well, anyway, my bottom line conclusion is, I'll always bet on the U.S. military high command doing hocus-pocus over extraterrestrials.
Well, you may be shocked when they introduce Zardoz from the planet. Whoops.
At that point, I'll call in and apologize.
Well, you know, and Zardoz may be visiting you. I don't know. So you don't think it's real? I guess that's the bottom line to you.
No, it is quasi-real. It's kind of like going to a magic show. You know, what you see is what they programmed you to see, and you have a tendency to interpret it wrong. But if you take and deconstruct it and think about it and so on, you say, well, how could you pull this off? And you kind of go, oh, yeah, there's this way and this way. Oh, isn't that clever, et cetera, et cetera. And let's face it, the guys don't get to be admirals and generals while at the same time being idiots. They know how to do things, and a little hocus-pocus is well within their capabilities.
Well, let's see if anybody else wants to challenge you, or if we hear from any members of the Senate dying to get this classified information so that they can leak it and release it to CNN and whoever.
Yep.
Anything else, Marshall, or is that it for you today?
That's it for me today. I'll let somebody else have some fun.
Thank you for your call, and I will introduce you to Robert for the book.
Okay.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Listeners, Marshall has cleared our line. Again, if you want to get Robert's book in ebook format or have something to say, it can be on a totally different topic. It doesn't have to be on what Marshall and I were talking about. Call us at 1-866-687-7223 and let us know what you think. I have an email question. This doesn't count for the book. So Jerry is in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he says, everybody knows the Trump position on space and returning to the moon and Artemis. I have two questions. Is the Trump administration position totally supported by at least the majority of the Republican Party, or is there dissent about his space program, just there as there is dissent about President Trump? Number two, does anybody know anything about the Democratic position on returning to the moon? Is it bipartisan? Do they want to do Artemis? Do they have a better idea? Do they want to cancel it and use the money for something else? It would be great if we had that information. So, Jerry, what I can tell you is not much, and I look for the information, but I do know the House recently passed a bill, and I don't have it in front of me, and I should. But it's in some of our archive programs, and it's on the blog, and I guess I'll put it in this blog. It's HR, and I don't remember the number of it, but maybe one of the listeners know. So this locks the commercial sector of space completely out of anything beyond LEO. It locks them out for lunar landers, going to the moon. All of that is now the domain of the government if this bill were to become law. And it was passed in the House of Representatives, and I guess it goes to the Senate, where who knows what will happen to it. But, of course, as we know, the commercial sector is very robust in going beyond LEO. They're doing lunar landers. They're talking about landers for the moon with people, not just cargo landers. Big spaceships, other things that would be private sector. Well, as I read it and as the Space News article said, which was written by Greg Autry and Rod Pyle, and Rod Pyle is the guest on the program Tuesday night, and we can ask him about that, although that's not why he's on the show. But Rod and Greg Autry authored the article about that House bill about a month ago in Space News. So that's, if that bill is true and goes forward, to me that would be a glimpse of how the Democrats, at least in the House of Representatives, see the space program and the desired space policy, which would be commercial, LEO only, everything beyond LEO, government. We have, and listeners, I'm open to your calls, and I'm open to supplemental information, because I, like Jerry, would like to know more, and unfortunately, I don't know more. We do have a caller on the program. Hi, caller. Welcome to the program. Who are you?
This is John from Fort Worth.
So you get the e-book?
Yeah, thank you.
You didn't get it before, did you?
No, I haven't got it yet, no.
Okay, so I'll introduce you later to Robert for you to get the e-book. And I figured you'd be listening and you'd have to retaliate to what Marshall had to say.
Yeah, I think I'd have to. I mean, his comments seem to ignore the full scope of what's involved here. I mean, commercial airline pilots have seen these as well as military pilots historically. I mean, I'm not limiting myself to the specific Nimitz-type phenomenon because it's much broader than that, and it goes back way further back in time than that. That's just the interesting case because somebody has some modern digital data on it, which is what you usually didn't get in the 50s or so, you know. So, but it's the real issue you asked was what will they get out of that request? And that is kind of interesting because we really don't know. One of the biggest mysteries about this whole subject is at what level the knowledge of this exists within the government. You know, in other words, what agencies, what secret special access programs, et cetera, you know, have that information, and did they actually send the request to the right people? I think that's one of the issues that they may run into, but I suspect they will get an unclassified report.
And, well, to me, it won't even be credible, so I'm not. And how would you know if it's credible?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Remember that individual congressmen have asked for this before about Roswell, and they did get an unclassified report.
That wasn't credible.
That's true, too. So I think they will get some kind of response, but as to whether they will actually be able to get in contact with all the knowledge of this subject is another issue. The other issue that's kind of playing around, which may have got into this though, a little bit, is this whole thing about the Wilson incident. You know, I mean, I would really suggest that if they really want to get some information on that, why don't they go ahead and subpoena him before the committee and in a classified session ask him what he really knows? I mean, I think that would be interesting because, I mean.
Most listeners don't follow this like you do. Tell them what the Wilson incident is all about.
Well, if you go back many years ago, in 1997, there's a kind of an erratic but interesting figure in the UFO thing named Greer, right? Dr. Greer.
Stephen
and there's
Greer,
also
yeah.
An astronaut named Edgar Mitchell, and they were kind of associated with each other. And they somehow, I don't know how, through some other leak, stumbled upon some information about a UFO-related project. And they went to Wilson and told him about it and asked him if he knew anything about it or something to that effect, and he said he would look into it. And he was blocked out of it. When he tried to look into it, he was basically told he wasn't cleared to know about it. And apparently he then appealed to the committee that controls all special super-secret projects, which apparently there is such a thing in the DOD, and they kind of told him, you know, get lost also, and if you really want your next promotion, you better back off this stuff. But somehow in the process, he did manage to finally get in contact with somebody that told him a few things about it. Not they never cleared him for it, but they told him enough about it to kind of say, okay, you're kind of right what this is, now go away and shut up. And they did apparently tell him that there was a reverse engineering project on some kind of a alien object that they had. And they also told him they weren't making a lot of progress on it. And they also told him that previously at some other congressional investigation or some other investigation had an auditor out there who had looked into it years before, and that caused him a lot of trouble, too. And it turns out apparently people figured out who this auditor was. It was sent back in when the first Lazar's stories came forward. So I don't know. That's basically it. And at any rate, a guy named Eric Davis, who's been a guest on the show, as you know, allegedly had an interview with Wilson after he retired from the service after being ahead of the DIA for several years, and apparently told him this story, basically. And it was shared in confidence, and I guess the notes of this, I think, were probably recorded and transcribed. And apparently a selected group of people had copies of it, including Edgar Mitchell. And when he passed away, there was apparently some individual from Australia who was interested in aerospace-type stuff and was given access by his relatives to his files, and this was found there, too, and the relatives weren't much interested in it and were wanting to throw it out. But they said, well, can I have it? So they let him have it, and eventually it got out on the Internet. Let's go through all the details of how. But And he denies that this is true, though, at this point.
Well, Mitchell was on the show once, and what's his name was also on the show, the other guy.
Eric Davis.
Well, Eric was on three or four times about advanced propulsion, not about this, but the other person along with Mitchell, who is it? You said he's also been on the show. I forgot his name already. Who'd you mention with Mitchell?
Greer?
Yeah, Stephen Greer was on the show.
He's a little eccentric. I mean,
early on, one time he was on the show, and he's now been back on the show.
He's a little eccentric. I mean,
to say the least.
Well, anytime you're dealing with this subject, you're dealing with a lot of interesting people, and just because they're a little crazy on some subjects, don't mean they don't occasionally have some facts. And the thing about him is, he also traveled with some high level people, though. He talked to retired CIA directors and
he had access to a lot of people for real,
and that's you know, he also has some weird ideas on how you can contact the object, but let's not get into that.
And he's by the way still around, and he's still active. People can follow Stephen Greer and his work if you want to do that. Edgar, of course, passed away several years ago. Edgar also came on the Art Bell show all the time, but you know, he denied that there were lunar objects on the moon. Richard Hoagland was making some pretty big and bold claims at the time of lunar structures and this and this, and even I think at one point was talking about the astronauts sort of being brainwashed and programmed to not remember this or that. And Mitchell really refuted most of all of that, and he even did a debate with Hoagland on Coast to Coast with Art Bell one time that I stayed up till 3 in the morning to listen to many, many years ago. The first Space Access conference I ever attended in Phoenix was when Hoagland and Edgar Mitchell had that classic debate on Coast to Coast, and I stayed up, I think it was till about 3 a.m. in the morning to hear it live on Coast to Coast. So Mitchell was out there, and of course he started the Noetic Institute and did the, you know, the paranormal experiments without authorization going to the moon. And I would have loved to have had him back on the show, but, you know, it didn't work out.
Also, I think he actually grew up in Roswell, New Mexico, too.
I think so, yeah.
So maybe that's how I first got into this. I don't know. But I don't know what to believe about all this stuff. I'm just saying, that would be an interesting lead to pursue, because all the people associated with it are all, you know, like Hal Putoff's another one of these people. And
tried to get him on the show. He doesn't reply to my emails.
Yeah, I think they're all going to ground a little bit. If this is real, this is a security breach. And you know, when you have top secret security clearance, security breaches are kind of career serious stuff, you know.
But what the hell is the security? If there are ETs out there, why does that have to be a national security thing? Clearly, they're not coming to attack us, because in all these years, you wouldn't be able to hide, vicious or evil intentions or attacks. So I don't know what's the big deal about acknowledging that there's extraterrestrial life, or that there's technology that can get here from someplace else. I don't get why that has to be super secret, unless they want to try to get the technology and control it for some nefarious purpose that power-hungry politicians want.
Or just normal national security purposes. I would suspect in the earliest days, if this is all right, that might have been it, that they wanted to see if they could reverse engineer some of this technology. I'm pretty sure they probably found out they couldn't. That's a guesstimate, but, you know, I mean, I just use the scenario where you take contemporary advanced technology and time portal it back to some time in the past and say, could the people then, if they had these artifacts, reverse engineer it? And the answer is, you know, like a contemporary laptop computer in 1900. Could they?
I don't know the answer. Maybe a couple of people could, who are really innovative and creative.
I would pretty much guess no.
But let's say an engine.
They'd be doing good to do the contemporary one in 1980. I think they probably could.
Let's say you put that laptop back in the day when Ford was just innovating and developing their Model T, and they pulled somebody off the line of making the Model T in the steam engine, and said, back engineer this.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The technology would be incomprehensible to them.
So you've got a really bright person. Could you have done it? And that's probably too big a leap, I would think.
That's what I think has probably been the case. And also, I think, but now there may be who knows what else is going on. But, you know, when deep security things get very deep, sometimes they stay that way. I mean, there's even bureaucratic reasons that might be maintained. I mean, think about it. If you actually had the job of maintaining this, and you've been doing this for decades, or your predecessor had been, it's probably a cushy job that pays well, and they don't have to report to hardly anybody. So, I mean, what's not to like if you got that job, right? I mean,
well, clearly somebody has to tell how to, for real, channel people who are no longer with us, so we can get to the bottom of this from the people that are always brought up but are no longer here. So we need real, authentic, bona fide channeling to visit with Edgar and other people to get to the bottom of this. So
bring them. Oh, get a transmedium, perhaps. But
other than Madame Lafarge or whatever, you know, from the local circus. Well, I guess the circus went out of business, but.
But another interesting thing is this recent this recent Trump thing, you know?
So what was that all about? That kind of is like, to me, Podesta saying, vote for Hillary and we'll release all the UFO information.
Well, sort of. But, I mean, I guess he needs every vote he can get. But that's an interesting thing. It just seems to me strange that these political figures are playing around with what used to be kind of political death to even bring up. You know, and it was kind of, I mean, who was that guy? There was some congressman from Ohio. What's his name? I forget him now. He was a fringe kind of guy, but he brought
up. Oh, I know. Dennis
Kucinich.
Kucinich, yeah.
That's it. That kind of,
he loved UFOs. He was really big in it.
But he was an eccentric political figure, and I don't think that helped him any. But I'm just saying, you know, look this interview with Trump's Jr. and Trump, that was put out as a campaign thing, you know, you have to sit there going, this was obviously pre-planned. This wasn't an ambush interview, you know. I mean, the campaign had total control of that video before it went out, right? So,
uh-huh.
the fact that he would put that in there, it's kind of interesting. I just think it's strange, that's all. I don't know what he's saying. He's saying, well, I know a few things, but I'm not sure if I'm going to tell, or something like that.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, it's a mystery, and I understand why people are incredibly skeptical. When you look at the amount of stuff that's going on, this isn't one incident. This is a lot of stuff. And even when you filter out, you know, the 90% that's probably rubbish or misidentification or whatever, but, you know, you still are left with a core there, you know?
Well, anything else you want to talk about other than UFOs? Otherwise, I'm going to move us on.
Oh, about the what the Democrats will do with Artemis if they win?
Do you have any facts or just your opinion?
For example, when
Senator Warren was running for president actively in the Democratic primaries and all that, did she ever advocate or articulate a space policy if she were the president? I don't know if any of the candidates did. I don't know why they would, because
I don't think anybody did that I know of. At least it wasn't very prominent. I can't say that some, you know, press release that didn't get much play was put out by somebody, but it didn't.
So we don't know, but I just know what the House bill was that Rod and Greg wrote about in Space News a couple of weeks ago, and I've talked about it on previous shows. But other than that, I don't know. Usually space is bipartisan, and I think Artemis has had bipartisan support. So I would hope that going to the moon didn't get scratched for the next flavor of a presidential space policy, because every time we have a new president, we get a new space policy, as you know.
Well, I think the key thing on this, though, is that the SLS and Orion have been proceeding along at their snail's pace throughout all this period, through both the Obama administration and the Trump administration. So there's no reason to think it won't continue, and it really has very little other purpose than to be a part of a moon mission, in my opinion. I mean, eventually, I mean, you need a lander to add to it, you know, but a government company could make a lander. You know,
that's what they say, but I don't know. I wish somebody who was maybe on the inside of a campaign had some real information to share with us.
I think you can forget about 2024, though.
Well, I don't think that's reasonable, and I've never thought that's reasonable.
I didn't either.
I heard them describe how they would claim victory from going to the moon at that ISDC meeting, I really came to the belief that all this is BS and not reasonable.
Look, these people are political appointees. They serve at the pleasure of the president ultimately, so they got to say, yes, sir, that's what we're going to do, sir. You know, but that doesn't mean they really seriously believe it behind the scenes. I think, you know, it's when politicians put an unreasonable demand out, you usually don't just say, well, you're wrong. You know, I mean, that's a good way to not have a job, right? So,
by the way, if NSS is able to do ISDC in Los Angeles at the end of next May, you need to plan to come out there if it's safe to come out there and attend it. I'm certainly looking forward to going to it if at all possible, and if Los Angeles is truly opened and secure. And with Mayor Garcetti, you never know that. But think about it. Listen to the program coming up with on Tuesday with Rod and Tony, because we're going to talk about the enlarged ISDC, because they're combining 2020 with 2021.
Okay, we'll consider this. All right.
All right. Talk to you soon, John. Thank you for your call.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Listeners, that is it. The line is available, and I'm going to read sponsor messages, and hopefully some of you will want to call us. I will answer the phone during the break, but I'll just put you on hold. So we do have sponsors that get the banner ad running across the website. You can change your banner as often as you like. And you also, on the full-length programs like today, you get a 60-second message that I read. You create the message. I read it. On the shorter programs, I simply give a shout-out to all of our great sponsors, because they really help us keep the show together, and we wouldn't be doing it without them. So our sponsors are Northrop Grumman, a leading global security company with innovative systems, products, and solutions for government and commercial customers worldwide, offering all sorts of capabilities and technology from undersea to outer space and cyberspace. The Space Foundation sponsors us. They had to kill their 36th symposium due to COVID, and you need to be checking at spacesymposium.org for details of how they're going to handle that, if it's going to be later this year, or what they're going to do about it. It's an incredible event, exhibit hall to really, it's the best exhibit hall ever, and networking to die for. So check it all out at spacesymposium.org. Astrox sponsors us. They've been involved in the hypersonic space plane work and reusable rocket design with the Air Force, DARPA, and NASA for 3 decades. And visit astrox.com for a lot more information. And we thank Dr. A.J. Kathari for his great work. And also, he has really good return to the moon plans that we've talked about on previous space show programs. AIAA, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, does sponsor us. And they, you know, are the largest of all these organizations. It's primarily an engineering organization, but you do not need to be an engineer to join. They have a peer-reviewed library going back years and years and years that you can access. Great networking. Now most of their events are virtual because of COVID, but they usually have regional breakfast, lunch, and dinner programs, plus their main big events during the year. AIAA.org is how to reach them for more information. Moonwords sponsors us. What if a group of nations was determined to build a town in to do so on the moon, and they base their decisions on technical and economic merit? Moonwords is building a digital vision of that town where you will be able to learn, play, build, and go to events. Visit moonwords.com, download an early draft memo of the town, and help fund its development by subscribing. Help us help the world see a bigger future where we can leave our past behind us. Celesta sponsors us, and they are still the iconic global provider of Memorial spaceflight services with orbital flights out of the Cape on a Falcon 9, suborbital with Up Aerospace out of New Mexico, and they have a lunar mission planned for fourth quarter of 2021. You can put your DNA in with your loved one's DNA or some cremated remains and symbolically make the journey with your loved one. For more information, visit celestis.com. And ISDC, National Space Society, we've been talking about it already, but they're a great sponsor. NSS also does space settlement workshops and does other things as well. Get all the information and, above all, listen to the program this Tuesday about NSS Space Day coming up in July, and their website, space.nss.org. And then finally, the Integrated Space Plan. This is a highly developed and detailed development chart showing the path to becoming a spacefaring race. You can see how technologies and destinations build upon one another. And all of this can be found at the Space Plan. .com. You can buy your own copy of the plan. It's in two different sizes and types. It's inspirational as well. So check it all out, thespaceplan.com. And listeners, we are officially in the second segment of today's Open Lines program. And hopefully some of you are still out there and you want Robert's book and you also want to talk to us about what's on your mind in space, whatever that may be. All topics are welcome and open. Call us 1-866-687-7223. And you can email us at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. So want to make another comment. Jim Logan was our program guest on Tuesday. Well, we have another caller. Caller, please hold. This is a real short announcement I want to make. Later, toward the end of the program with Dr. Logan, Dr. Doug sent in a note because Dr. Logan was talking about getting to Mars and needing advanced propulsion, and that chemical rockets wouldn't do it. So Doug sent in a question and said, what if Starship refueled in orbit and then went to Mars, and wouldn't that be almost as good and reduce travel time to Mars significantly so that you didn't need nuclear propulsion? You could do it with chemical rockets. And Dr. Logan curtly answered no, and then I got him to explain a little bit about that, and he explained a little bit more about why he said no. Excuse me. And then we moved on to other topics. Among the blog comments that came in, one of them was quite long and quite critical of what Dr. Logan said. So I heard from multiple listeners and readers of the blog that disagreed with the critique of Logan, although they didn't totally disagree with the critique. One of the more detailed and instructive critiques came from Dr. Jurist, who's willing to spend the time to help teach me, because I'm not an engineer and I'm not a physicist. Everything I've ever learned about science, engineering, and physics and astronomy has been on the space show, to paraphrase a famous book from maybe 30 or 40 years ago. Anyway, Dr. Jurist is posting a detailed response to the critique of Logan. And I want those of you interested in this topic, you will find his response maybe later today, maybe in the morning, on the blog for the Dr. Logan show, but I'm going to copy and paste it to the blog of this show too. And what he's saying is that the critique is not wrong. It is overly simplistic, and the assumption making in the critique is really simplistic, something you've heard me harp about for years on the space show, that space cadets, and they make unrealistic and simplified and unfounded assumptions all the time. And I believe Dr. Jurist is going to show why the critique is simplistic and the assumptions are too simplistic, and why it's a much more complicated response than the critique offered, and certainly than Dr. Logan offered. So I'm just calling that to your attention for those of you that are interested in that topic. And again, the original critique by Dr. Jurist will go up on the Logan show later this evening or possibly in the morning. And when that happens, I will copy it to this blog as well. Let's see who our caller is. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you and where are you?
This is John in Fremont, California.
Hi, John. Boy, it just seems like open line is only for Johns. It's all... other than one Marshall and the rest are all Johns. How are you doing?
Good. I want a free book.
I thought you got it before.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, free ebook, please.
Okay, so you have an ebook coming. I will introduce you to Robert later on. But you've got to sing for your reward here. Do you have any comments or questions for Open Lines today?
Of course. I wanted to call your attention to a recent discovery. This is by the Gemini Observatory, which I think they have a Hawaiian telescope and a South American one. But this is a discovery of a monster black hole found in the early universe. And it's the second most distant quasar ever discovered. And it's 1.5 billion solar masses. So it's a huge monster. And astronomers are puzzling over this because it's so far back. It's 700, I guess 13 billion light years away. So it was formed right around 700 million years after the Big Bang. So that's a very short period of time, and they're scratching their heads trying to figure out how such a monster could have formed with the current theories of how black holes form. So it's a pretty interesting article, and I can post it on the blog if you want.
Yeah, please do. How did they see it? I mean, that's being able to see pretty far back.
So they used two telescopes. I think they triangulated on it with an interferometer or something like that. But this, the quasars are very, very bright. So they can see quasars way, way back in the past or very far away. And they're just pumping out huge amounts of energy as, you know, with these black holes, the way they funnel the accretion disk gas that's spinning around it out through these jets that fire out the poles of the black hole, out the magnetic field lines. And it's a huge amount of energy that can be seen from a long way away. So they're very bright, very distant. That's kind of their fingerprint, if you will.
And I'm assuming this has been confirmed, and we know for a fact now that it's there, right?
Yeah, this is a press release on the Gemini Observatory website.
Okay. Cool. It'd be great to be able to see it, but I guess we wouldn't know. We wouldn't really know what we're looking at, right?
No, it's just a dot in the sky. But
yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Wow, that far away. So that's the Big Bang is 14 billion years, right? Something.
Yeah, 3.7, I think, and this is 700 million after that. So that puts it at like 13 billion light years away, and 13 billion. Years in the past. So, it's just mind-boggling how large these supermassive black holes are. You know, if you think of it, our sun, how huge it is, and, you know, it's a million miles in diameter, but it has, you know, one solar mass. So this is 1.5 billion of those in mass. It's just enormous. I mean, and we've got a supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy, but it's only like 3 million, I think, solar masses. But 1.5 billion, I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Marshall wants to ask you a question.
No point.
He says, ask Fremont about primordial black holes. Black holes produced by the Big Bang?
I'm not an expert on that. I can't really speak to that.
But you went to Cal for astronomy studies. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Back in the day.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, but that was when Cal was Cal and not Cal, the PC protest heaven. So you probably got a real education way back when.
Yeah.
They neglected primordial black holes from your agenda?
No, they didn't. They didn't have that in there. We did calculate something about how to calculate the event horizon of a black hole, given, you know, certain equations. I remember that, but I don't think they were even talking about primordial black holes back then. So, primordial.
Marshall, come up with another question that's simpler for our Cal graduates.
Oh God,
Cal graduates need more simplicity. So, more simplicity and elegance, Marshall. What's happening with your blog?
Oh, well, thanks for asking that. I'm posting kind of on a regular basis. The most recent one was this purchase of Maiden Space by this new holding company called Redwire happened in June. And Redwire is an interesting conglomerate formed by AE Industrial Partners, and they they've already just purchased Deep Space Systems and at Kole Space, and they combine Maiden Space with that. And so with the acquisition of Maiden Space, and, you know, Maiden Space has this Archonaut platform, which is a 3D printing platform for making large structures in space. So AE Industrial Partners is well-positioned for solving a lot of the complex challenges of future space missions for space settlement. So that'll be pretty interesting. You know, there's this guy named Kevin Cannon, who's a planetary scientist down in Florida, and he posts stuff on Twitter all the time. And he had a thread on Twitter that's very interesting, and he's proposing, well, he's not proposing, he's suggesting that suppliers for SpaceX begin getting ready to put together the supply chain for what SpaceX needs for sanitation, for food production, for you know, all the things that are needed, medical supplies, entertainment, finances, and such. So that's on the blog. And I actually, just reminder, thanks for asking this. I have a potential guest for you.
Well, it sounds like Cannon should be a guest. Do you know how to reach him? Can you tell me?
I can figure it out. I'll let you know.
Let me know. That sounds like a fun show to do.
Yeah, it does. So this other guy, Camille, I'm going to butcher his name, Muzka, he's from the Polish Academy of Sciences, a PhD candidate in law studies there, published an essay in the Space Review outlining all the various regulations that need to be put together to foster space settlement, and that was an interesting post. So, I gave him some kudos on Twitter, and you know, sent a link to my post, and he got back to me, and he sent me a longer article of what was in the Space Review, he may be an interesting guest. He does have he did a TED talk recently, so he speaks pretty good English. So,
you sent me that longer article, right? Because I think I saw something like this yesterday.
It could have been, yeah.
Well, I'll follow it up, and if you did not send it with his contact information, and I'll add that to my growing list of people to get on the show. Oh, don't tell me I lost you. Are you there, Joe?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, send me the information, and I'll add him to my to be invited list. Hello.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
For the delay, I'm moving between rooms here. Sorry about that.
Think what it'll be like when you're moving through space with, you know, got to do better on communications than this. How's the virus in the East Bay? Any statues in your area not surviving the virus?
I haven't heard of anything coming down in Fremont, but, you know, we're just staying indoors. And
Any moving bands showing up at Tesla to sort of move it to Nevada or Texas, or is it still staying there?
I haven't been down there, so I don't know. I don't know. They're at the southern end of town. I'm at the northern end. So Rick might be a better one for that one.
Okay. Well, stay safe, and we'll probably talk during the week, and have a terrific July 4th holiday weekend.
Okay. And don't forget to send me that email for the book.
Yeah, it'll probably be tonight before I introduce you and the others to what do you call it, to Robert. And you already have his email address, don't you?
I don't think I do.
Okay. I'll send the invite. I have three, unless some more people call for the book before we get off the show. All right. Take care, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay.
Thank
Bye.
You. Listeners, John has cleared the line. How about a non-John calling the show? Of course, if a another person named John wants to call the show, that's perfectly fine. But maybe there's a non-John out there who would like to call the program. Our toll-free number, if you are still interested in talking to us today and getting Robert Jacobson's book, Space is Open for Business, please call 1-866-687-7223. And I think that's – no, I guess not. That's that came in on my cell phone, but I shouldn't have even heard that because it's supposed to be on silent. I'll put out the toll-free again one more time, 1-866-687-7223. If you would like to call us today, we would like to hear from you. Some other news that I can possibly spark a call with that I've been kind of halfway tracking. Well, I got another phone call, and these calls are not coming in on caller ID. What are you guys doing to not come in on caller ID? Hello, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you? Thank you for your call.
Hi, this is Kim in Mexico.
Hi. Somehow your call ended up on my cell phone before, but good to hear from you. How are you?
I'm good.
So
how are you?
So you get Robert's book.
You know, I've missed like the first 15 minutes of the show. What book is that?
So Robert did a show with us June 12th. He has a new book on commercial space called Space is Open for Business. And then there's a lengthy subtitle to it. And it is a pretty good space commercial business book. You know, there's a lot of them that are written each year. But this was really good. But Robert put out a book offer on the 12th for the live show. And then for archive listeners, in order to have them actually listen to the show and not just say they wanted the book, toward the end of the show, I embedded a code into the discussion. And then when they hear the code, they now know how to get a book as an archive listener. So he extended the book offer, except it's only for ebooks now. He's given out all the hardback books that he had to give out, but he is still giving out ebooks. So callers to today's show automatically get an ebook, and I will introduce them to Robert later today via email so you can work out details for getting the ebook. Archive listeners will have to email me with the code that I give out in a few minutes, and then they too can get the ebook, and I'll introduce them to Robert as they email me from the archive show. But it is a very good commercial space book. You know, there's been quite a few of them that have been written in the past year, Space 2.0, and each one, I think, seems to build on the others and do a little bit of a different perspective and maybe a little bit better in some areas. But Roberts is pretty good, but he's had the best book offer giveaway program I've ever done on the Space Show.
Cool. Well, I'll look forward to it, and maybe it'll help me figure out how to establish a non-space business, but that's space-related.
Well, and the thing about Robert is he's actually a business guy. So he's not an author writing about business. He actually is a real bona fide space business guy involved in business, taking risk, investing money, managing, and all of that. So he lives in L.A., and he's a good person to know.
Well, his approach to getting the book out there makes him sound like such a guy. He seems interested in the business happening.
Yeah, and we came up with an innovative idea that I've never tried on the Space Show before, and now probably other authors might want to do it. I told him that he could pick a chapter or an event or a space business event that he wanted to mention on an open line show and call on a future open line show and promote his book by talking about a chapter in the book or something that is space commerce related that ties into his book, and maybe giving out a few more ebooks each time he calls the open line show. So he agreed to do it, and that's why he called today. And I've never had a sort of an ongoing author talk about space commerce in the book and then give away additional free copies of the book, even in the ebook format. So Robert's kind of a guinea pig, and so far it seems to be working. And,
yeah, it's an interesting idea. It sounds like a good way to expand the dialogue in general.
I hope so. What's new in Mexico? How are you doing?
Well, our life here is pretty quiet. You know, we're on the edge of a small town, so things are quiet here. There hasn't been any tour buses rolling into town for a long time because of the virus, but people here sort of proceed with life. You see a few masks around, and that's about it. So it's a little surreal reading about things happening in other places. I mean, God knows Mexico's getting hit hard, but it's like it's invisible, you know?
Well, it is. We can't see the virus. We just see the effect of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only effect that we actually personally see is some people wearing masks, and, you know, not many. And, you know, some buses closed and some buses not there, but, you know, you don't see the sick, right? You don't see signs of the sick. There's a much larger problem in Mexico than there is in a lot of places of people not believing that it's really happening, or that they think it's a government conspiracy or a conspiracy of some kind. You know, the cases here in town are starting to pile up much more quickly, so we'll see how it develops. But, so that's what's going on here.
How's Moonwards coming?
We're tidying up a few things. Last week we were working on the animation of the rover, so people can drive around a rover. We were working out problems with the character control, so the player can move smoothly at a realistic sense of gravity like there is on the moon. It's now a question of nailing in the last few things so that I'm able to add a little bit more content and it plays smoothly and works everywhere, and then I can post a download again, which hasn't been on the website for a couple months now because we were having so many technical problems. And then it's time to do a push and look for backing and look for different kinds of contributions and all of that fun stuff.
Do we have a sort of a complete test date, something where listeners will get to see what you've been building for the last several months?
How optimistic you are to always ask me that question.
Yeah, you should know that before you call. You're going to be asked for a timeline.
Yeah, I do kind of know that, and I call anyhow.
That's right, glutton for punishment, as we say in the community. So the timeline, please, we're waiting.
Well, you know, the thing is that I'm not traumatized by the number of times I've announced that we're almost done, and then there's a bug. Or there's a bunch of bugs, or there's something completely unexpected, you know, that it all works, but it only runs at 15 frames per second, which is unplayable. So I really think we're in the final stretch. I have a new project manager who's only been with the project for a couple of months, and he has really transformed the whole thing. I'm very positive about it now. I mean, I've always loved the idea, but I've just floundered with the code side of it because I'm not a coder. It really feels good. It really feels like I now have to really get ready, get my pitches ready, figure out who I'm going to call, figure out what I'm going to say, and, you know, plan the steps. I don't think it'll be more than a month. Let's put it that way. The thing is, the project manager, this guy who has really turned the tide, he doesn't want to be more than a month. I think he's starting to get a little bit impatient. It's like, you know, it's good enough. No, you know, it's give me a chance. I'm not calling up normal game studios. I need to first talk to people in the space industry and get some of them on board. I have to be careful about how I do this because I'm not a game developer. This is something that I'm doing because of my interest in space development in general. So, but he feels that we're he feels that we're ready to go, and he wants to get out of the gate. So I think it's going to be very soon.
Well, we're anxious. So, you know, hopefully that will happen pretty soon. People really are anxious. Maybe this year.
Well. Okay. All right. Yes. This year. I mean, yeah. I mean, the thing I'm working on now is much different than what I've been floundering around with for the last, you know, it seems like an eternity sometimes, because it's been very drudge kind of grunt kind of work that just seems to never end to make things work. And now I'm having fun depicting an updated, futurized kind of version of the rover that was planned to go on the Constellation program, which was a six-legged rover that was able to both walk and roll on wheels that were on the ends of each of its six legs. And it could even split in two, and you could use each half of it separately. And it wasn't just a wild-eyed idea. They built a prototype of that. So now we've taken that rover and turned it into something that can, you know, travel like 100 kilometers an hour. Although that's difficult, because on the moon you have to wonder how it's managing to maintain its traction and not flip over. But the fun thing about game engines is that they're able to get involved some very realistic physics for that. And now we're just, you know, we're just trying to make it fun rather than trying to just make it work.
Well, we look forward to it. Maybe you'll be able to come and demonstrate it and present it if ISDC is held in Los Angeles next May.
Yeah, well, doing conferences is something that maybe at this stage will be important. I need to get a few people privately to go in and take a look at everything, give me feedback. There's a lot to do in terms of just making this into something that is something that will genuinely serve the community the way I think that it could. It's meant to be a place for everything that's going on in the community to be put on display in a way where people have a sense of what we're building towards. And well, you know, I've been on the show a number of times and talked about this. I just need to refine that all into something that actually works as a way of sharing.
Listeners, here's the code. I'm sneaking it in now to get Robert's book if you're an archive listener. So write the magic words down. It is really complex. It is send Robert's book. So if you email me, don't post it on the blog because I probably won't see it. Email it to me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, and someplace in your email or subject line, say send Robert's book, and you will get an e-copy of Robert's book. So those are your magic words. Now, Kim, I'm through interrupting you.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, I haven't polished how I'm going to convey what a wonderful place this is. So I'm off the cuff here. I actually called in to you know, talk about space news, and I'm just tacking on stuff about my own project a little bit.
So what's in space news that's on your mind?
Well, this may seem like a little thing, but to me this is exciting. And NASA gave SETI a grant, and it's just a small grant. Has this come up on the show at all?
Who did they give the grant to?
To SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
No,
NASA gave SETI a grant.
Not come up on the show. This is the first I've even heard of it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's one of those things. It wasn't a big grant. It was for a study called Characterizing Atmospheric Technosignatures. So, you know, not only did they give SETI a grant, which, you know, that hasn't happened in 30 years. In fact, SETI, as far as I know, has done everything almost entirely on its own with private funding. So NASA giving SETI a grant at all of any kind, I think, is pretty significant. But the other thing is that it's for technosignatures. I mean, that's out there, you know, and it's for mathematical modeling of how you would detect those kinds of signatures. So it's just a very beginning kind of study of how to even do it. but it's opening those doors. You know, it's saying this is something that we're going to take seriously, so seriously that we're actually, like, putting money on the table. I think that's pretty cool.
Interesting. Where did you see it?
Well, I saw it in Centauri Dreams, which is a blog that I really like to read because it really gets into, you know, it's super nerdy. It really talks about a lot of very high technical details. And then if you search for it, it was actually covered in a few other places. It was covered in Forbes.
Well, I'll put a link to it. I'll find it. I have Centauri Dreams, but you might have to read quite a ways through Centauri Dreams to find the article on that.
It wasn't the most recent article.
Yeah,
the most recent article was interesting too, but this was only a couple weeks ago,
okay.
So it's not that far back.
I will find a link to put it in there. I'm also interested in that. I think that's pretty interesting news because years and years and years ago they cut out public funding of SETI and it went strictly private sector to survive. And so it's interesting that they're getting some public funding again.
Yeah.
Maybe the Senate knows more than what they're letting on by asking for all the UFO material.
Yeah, well, you know, in the coverage for it, one of the people on the team that's going to do this modeling was Abe Loeb. So his name's been coming up a lot in the last couple of years because of his...
Yeah, I want him to come back on the show, but I guess he has to publish his book next, and then I can get him back on the show. But, yeah, he's the one who said Oumuamua might be from extraterrestrial life in another solar system. Of course, it did not get wide support, but at least he put it out there.
Yeah, he's got the lead on it. The lead is a guy from the University of Rochester. But it's one of those things where there's advocates for the idea now of taking extraterrestrial intelligence seriously, who are heavier hitters and are continuing to push and having some success.
Interesting. I'm glad you you brought that up because I had missed that. So I will find it after the show and make sure I link to it.
Yeah.
What else? You don't have a telescope. Do you have clear skies where you are? Or light pollution? Could you see things with a telescope?
In the winter, we have excellent viewing conditions here. Actually, more accurately, in the dry season, which starts in December and goes through May. Right around our house, there's some light pollution, but you don't have to go more than 15 minutes away and set up in a field. And there's excellent conditions here. We're 2,000 meters above sea level, for half the year, the atmosphere is very, very dry, excellent viewing conditions.
Do you have a decent telescope?
We have planned to buy one a few times and have put it off a few times. But we will. It's just one of those things where you want to make sure that you actually have the time to go out and properly enjoy it. I've wanted to get one for a while. We both have.
Somebody just sent you a question, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Linda is in Portland, and I guess it's Oregon. I don't know, but I guess it could also be Maine, so it's just Portland. And she says, I'm curious if Moonwords has a logo store, and how do you find it?
We do, but I haven't plugged it into the updated website because I'm not sure exactly how to handle it with the layout yet. And I actually hadn't gotten any sales. It'd been around for a while, and it wasn't. I mean, the thing is, I have never really pushed Moonwords except on a space show, and the space show is like training grounds for me. It's a way for me to get a contact within the community that I'm trying to serve, and to learn how to speak about this. So, it is technically possible to buy a T-shirt or other logo wear. However, I haven't put up the contact. If she would send me, ask her to send me an email. You know my email address, and then I'll send her the link. Let's do that right now.
Or do you want me to post the link on the blog?
Well, but the thing is, it's kind of, I haven't put it on the website. If I was to send her a link, I'd send her a link to the actual service Gumroad that actually does the actual printing and mailing. So it wouldn't be through the actual website because I haven't put it on the website right now.
Okay.
And honestly, I mean, it's something that a service I want to offer. But my first order of business right now is to find backing that is not on the order of like logo wear. And I've been so obsessed with that that I've sort of let that thing slide.
Listeners, and if Kim has the same T-shirt she had several years ago at the conference in Monterey, California, she has a really great logo, and it's a very cool T-shirt. If she hasn't changed that, so if anybody else is interested, email me and I'll put you in touch with Kim, and she can send you a link to where you can get the T-shirt. I don't have any pictures of it, but when I wear it, the most attention I get with a T-shirt is a SpaceX T-shirt. And then I think Kim's is probably next in recognition, along also with Space Show. But SpaceX is by far and away the most interesting T-shirt for getting attention out there with the masses. But Kim's does really well, too. So it's a really cool T-shirt. So post a comment on the blog or email me, and I'll put you in touch with her for anybody, not just Linda, if you want a T-shirt.
Yeah, I apologize for the gaps in service here. See, I have been, I'm the only person who builds the website and builds the models and designs the game and writes everything. So I'm a really busy person, and I'm just trying to do this in the right order to get the project actually moving. And selling T-shirts has just seemed like, you know, not a big priority right now. I could stick it on the website in some corner, but I'm just trying to do it right. You know, if you do something like that with a website, as well you know, David,
uh-huh.
Sometimes you get into problems later on when you have to ship things around and then you realize this thing's broken and then it just... So it's you know, it's possible to get T-shirts and all that kind of stuff.
Well, so anyone who wants it, email me or... post on the blog, and Kim will get the message, and you'll go from there. And,
okay.
And of course, for this custom service, there's a 750% surcharge. Because so, this is labor-intensive process to buy a T-shirt. Anything else on your mind?
Well, actually, since you asked about a telescope, I was reflecting as John from Tremont was talking about that supergiant black hole, that, you know, the thing is, it was in the 1920s that it first started to become commonly recognized that there were such a thing as other galaxies. It was 100 years ago. Before that time, other than, you know, speculation within astronomical circles, people didn't even realize there was anything beyond our galaxy. And now we're talking about mentally defying objects 13 billion light years away. That's how far we've come in 100 years.
Well, we'll see how far we go in the next 100 years.
Yeah, I think we're on the cusp of a big breakout. You know, you guys, I listened to Jim Logan's show, actually, after you recommended it to me. And, you know, you guys have gotten so crusty. And I understand why, but okay. I really think we're really on the edge. We're ready to make a big step.
I thought I was kind of on the objective side, just opening up for him to be fully expressive. I didn't take many opinions one way or the other, although some things that Jim says I certainly agree with. But
yeah, and you know, I mean, it's very valid to criticize, you know, a lot of the fan perspective that happens these days. But
yeah, but like I'm not happy. I don't think Artemis is a great program. I've been saying that for years. I think the absence of a gravity prescription, Jim is right, means that NASA's really not that serious about doing this. I'm mixed about going to Mars. I'm not as negative about it as Jim is. And I do support having really big visions for going into space and why we're doing it. But that doesn't mean just any big vision. You know, you got to have a good vision. And I'm unable to expertly respond to Dr. Doug's question about orbital depots and Starship getting there as fast as a nuclear rocket, or the criticism of Dr. Logan's that's come in. And I'm anxious to see what Jurist writes about it. But I think Jim was pretty flip and simplistic in his answer to Dr. Doug. And I tried to draw him out, but he didn't want to be drawn out very much on it.
Well, I do agree, and you know, because Moonwords always contemplates what would happen if we were in ideal conditions, and the planet was as a whole highly interested in developing space. Yeah, I think he's absolutely right that how quickly you can get to Mars if you refill an orbit is not the question. The question is, what's the best way to develop space? And you know, my take on SpaceX, especially in Elon Musk's approach, is that the first thing you have to do is make the public interested in the idea at all. And if you're going to do that, the avenue you have to do that mostly is expanding on the idea of colonizing Mars, because nobody's interested in the moon. And so that's what he's done. And he's been pretty successful at that. Now, what actually happens, you know, when dollars are being spent and things are being launched, that's a different question. You know, having that as being a long-term goal is inspirational. You know, where you go when you first launch, you do what you can, what's going to advance your cause the most. And I bet you the first place a private rocket lands is going to be the moon. And it's also going to be the second, and it's also going to be the third.
No, I agree with you. It that's within grasp. I'm not sure Mars is going to be within grasp for quite a while.
Yeah, but you know, there's two gigantic companies now building gigantic private rockets, and so whatever else happens, we're getting ready to make a really big step.
I have another note that just came in from Becky in Denver, and she said, while not related to Kim's call, when Robert called, he said today was Musk's birthday. I did look it up, and he was born June 28th of 1971, and he is 49 years old today. So, there.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And do you know, I looked it up after I got her email. You know what his middle name is?
No.
We should give away something else for someone who can quickly do his middle name without searching for it. But it is Reeve, R-E-E-V-E. And then it says Elon Reeve Musk, F-R-S. And I don't know what capital F, capital R, capital S stands for. Do you?
No. No. Was that on Wikipedia or?
I just put, after I got Becky's email, I just put in Musk's birthday, and it's in a sidebar. So yeah. I don't know what FRS means.
Doesn't sound like any kind of degree I know of.
I don't know. Maybe it's something from South Africa, because he was born in South Africa in Pretoria, but I don't know.
Mm.
Maybe someone else does. Fremont John has a question for you.
Okay,
come on, email. Damn it. John, your email may be blank. Wait a minute. Let's see if I can pull it up again. Okay, so it's not blank. He just has a subject line question for you. What does Kim mean by on one is interested in the moon? I think maybe he means only one is interested in the moon, but it's your comment you made a few minutes ago. He says, what does Kim mean by on, O-N, one, O-N-E, is interested in the moon? I would certainly expand that to say, using non-UC Berkeley grammar, what does John mean?
Actually, I was struggling with that. Maybe there was something that maybe he was doing on the phone or something. I don't understand what he means by that.
Well, that's because he went to Cal, and today is my day to not Cal. But, John, if you're still listening, if you can repair the grammar for the rest of us mortals who did not have an opportunity to go to the University of California, we would be happy to reformulate your question so that all of us little folk can understand what it is that you're asking, Kim. But you got to hurry up.
Oh, nobody is interested in the moon. I said, okay, yeah. I said that nobody's – the general public,
you
I really don't think is interested in the moon.
Yeah, so but that's not – but so what does Kim mean by – so maybe he's trying to say no one instead of on one. Maybe
yeah, that makes sense.
To be no
it?
One.
Yeah.
So I guess they don't learn how to type correctly at Cal either. Here he is. Yeah. So he's correcting it. You got it, Kim.
Yeah.
And you didn't go to Berkeley, so my hat goes off to you. Yes, no one. So
yeah, it's well. I mean, I don't think. I think if you want to have people daydream about going to another planet with what the general public knows about space, you get them to daydream about going to Mars. Because, you know, I don't think anybody has any sense that there's anything interesting that people could actually do long term. I think that's the way the general public sees it. When they imagine an advanced space program that actually manages to settle something in space, they all think of Mars. They all do. They don't think that there's ever going to be a colony on the moon because there's no movies about it. There's no books about it. It's you know, they just think of the moon as being a wasteland. And it, to me, that's like one of the greatest things about the moon is that it is a wasteland. There's no possibility of there being life there. You can do what you want with it. And everything that you do there is stuff that you don't damage on a planet that might have life or here at home. And it's only 3 days away, you know, or even less if you have a nuclear rocket. So the thing is, I think that the moon has really been severely, severely undersold, not just by NASA, but by space science fiction in general. You know, it's not, you know, everybody thinks that the whole plan was that we went to the moon just to sort of test things out, and then what we really want to do is go to Mars and establish a colony there. You have to go back to the 70s to see anybody contemplating a colony on the moon. Other than, what was it? Was the book called Artemis as well?
I think there was because it's a Greek mythology name, but there have been science fiction shows about screwing up the moon and knocking it out of its orbit, and the Earth is destructing and collapsing, and they've somehow got to rush and get up to the moon and reverse the damage that was done by the renegades who went up to mine some precious metal that's messing up the moon and its orbit and get it back into orbit. So there was even a $6 million man show on that subject. So I have seen things like that in sci-fi.
Yeah, but that was in the 70s, right?
I don't know, maybe the show was in the 80s. I don't remember when the show was. But
The $6 Million Man? That was in the 70s.
That was in good memory. Yeah, so that was in the 70s, but I've seen other sci-fi stories about screwing up the moon somehow, and it affects Earth, and that you've got to put the moon back in order. So that's kind of a common theme, I think, with the moon. So people do realize it's important to the Earth.
Yeah, but I think the whole thrust about, especially when any science fiction that's realistically talking about a space colony, other than that one book by Andy Weir.
You know,
they've all been, the vast majority of them are Mars. And you know, NASA was saying since the 70s that the next target is Mars, and everybody thinks that it's Mars, that what you do is you want to go to Mars in the United States. I mean, if you ask China what they want to do, their opinion is completely different.
If you know, if you say Andy Chang real quickly, Andy Ware, it's kind of like underwear. Anyway, sorry to do that. You know, absolutely. I've seen also sci-fi stories where the moon is being used as some kind of military base by the aliens to attack Earth or something like that. So, but I haven't seen any of that recently.
Yeah, I mean, there's science fiction about all kinds of things, but I think the overall mythology about our future is that what we do is we establish a colony on Mars. That's the general overall arch of science fiction, is that our next step is a colony on Mars. It's not a colony on the moon. And that has not been the idea in the psyche of science fiction and space enthusiasts for a few decades. They think we're going to Mars. And so that's the thing to sell.
Yeah.
You can't really sell going to the moon and colonizing it.
No, I actually agree with you. And that doesn't include selling going to the moons of Mars, even though that would be simpler. That doesn't sell either.
No, I mean, that I love that idea. But it just, you know, actually, it's a lot easier to film a movie that, you know, that looks like it's on the surface of Mars and you know, makes things interesting of that. I don't know what all the ingredients are. But anyhow, the popular psyche, when Elon Musk says that he wants to establish a colony on Mars, that gets them fired up because they think that's what the plan was. And then the ball got dropped. If he said, I'm going to, you know, you see how much more resistance Jeff Bezos has had to his visions?
Uh-huh.
And you know, he has just as much ability to see those things realized as Elon Musk does. In fact, perhaps more, you know, in shared dollar terms. But he's not the same kind of, his way of doing business is different, and he hasn't sold his vision. And maybe part of the reason why that's hard is it doesn't plug into what the popular conception of what we're supposed to do next is.
Well, I guess all of this hopefully will clarify and unfold in the coming years with the capability of SpaceX and whatever happens regulatory-wise to facilitate a SpaceX vision on Mars.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm certainly definitely in the camp with that is not a good idea. But once he has a ship, I'm sure he'll find something very interesting to do with it, so I don't really worry about it.
Anything else you want to share or talk about?
No, I look forward to hearing the next caller. I've actually been on the line a while, haven't I?
Yeah, but that's okay. We'll see if there is another caller. We're pushing 2 hours now. So you took us from less than 90 minutes to almost 2 hours. So
yeah. So
that's good. All right. Thank you very much for the call. And I will later on introduce you to Robert with the others for you to get the ebook.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Kim. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Listeners, Kim is off of our phone line. We are pushing a 2-hour program. If you want to call in and have a chance for the ebook and be on the live show, you really need to, and somebody is doing it. I was going to say you really need to get with it. Let's see if caller ID tells me who it is. No. God, what's with all these caller IDs? Good afternoon, caller. Who are you? Where are you? Thank you for calling.
This is Doug from Redwood, California.
Hi, Doug.
Hi. I want to respond to a couple things. First of all, I totally agree with your previous caller that
Doug, I think we lost your cell phone call. Doug? Well, I don't know what's with the cell phone technology today. Doug, are you there? Okay. Doug, if you can hear me, please call back. And but regardless, you get the ebook. Because you did call, but hopefully maybe this is you calling back. Doug, is this you again?
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened. So, yeah, I totally agree with Kim that you know, it doesn't matter what sci-fi has repeatedly, you know, the picture repeatedly gives, and that, and I agree with her, it's more likely to be space Mars settlement than moon settlement in science fiction. But I think it's almost irrelevant, because what's going to matter is the natural factors that are going to decide what we do first, and things like finances, things like international interest, and practical matters, you know, such as travel time and these sorts of things. Safety is another big issue. You know, you don't want to be doing an Apollo 13 on the way to Mars, because you'll be dead. But on the way to the moon, you might be able to survive. So I totally agree with Kim on this matter. And in fact, at the Mars Society convention, the last one that met, I did a presentation in which I made the argument that a round trip to the moon takes 11 days, but a round trip to Mars takes 26 months, meaning that the next time that the Earth-Mars window opens. So you could launch again. And when you do the math, it's about 70 times different. You can do 70 round trips to the moon with a Starship than you could do with a round trip to Mars. And so I think that, you know, even for SpaceX, they're going to look at, wow, we could sell 70 times more tickets for passengers to the moon for every ticket, you know, to Mars. And I think that that's going to influence even them. You know, they're not going to forego all of that revenue just for Mars. And also I think that people who are old enough to have saved up enough money to buy the tickets, you know, they're going to want to be in interactive contact with their friends and families and colleagues. And you can do that on the moon, but you can't do that on Mars. You can only do, like, video email. So I think that, you know, where's the Starship first going to land? It's not going to be Mars. It's going to be the moon. I think that's, you know, the way it's appearing right now.
I suspect you're probably right, but that still doesn't make me appreciate or like the Artemis project to get back to the moon.
Oh, I'm with you, because that has the problems of the expense, you know, to where you have tens of billions of dollars for just a few people.
Yeah, and it has government crap all over it. And we could just go there direct. It's just so, anyway, but Artemis is the name of the game, and I guess that's better than nothing, if it happens. Oh, don't tell me I lost you again. Doug, are you there? Your cell phone's acting like my cell phone. Doug, are you there? What the hell is wrong with your cell phone? Okay, we'll give him a chance to call back. He often has a bad cell phone connection, but today, maybe on Sunday, this is cell phone hell. Doug, is this you again?
Yeah, is there any chance the problem might be on your side?
Because I hear a sound. I don't think so, because I'm on a hard line connection.
Yeah, but you're not bumping, because I hear rustling sounds just before it goes dead.
No, it's probably the cell connection is probably not very good and moving in and out. So I have really crappy cell service where I'm on Verizon, and my cell service in Petaluma where I live is really, really horrible. It's enough to make me move. In fact, I would move if COVID wasn't out there so prevalent. I don't want to move during COVID. So I think it's the cell service maybe coming into Petaluma. Are you on AT&T or Verizon?
I'm on Verizon.
Well, it's beyond horrible in Petaluma. So my hunch is that's what's happening. It's probably being overloaded because people are locked in still and up here, and a lot of people are using it.
So, David, let me just share with you. I wanted to comment. You mentioned that I had asked a question of Dr. Logan about the 4 months that Elon had mentioned as a possibility with refueling in Leo.
Yeah, and I do think he dismissed the question. I tried to get him to draw it out, but he wouldn't do it.
I saw that you tried to draw him out on that, and, you know, he's got very adamant views, and I wish sometimes he would explain his positions rather than just overtly state them, because there's some sort of obvious questions that people would come up about his positions, and yet he doesn't really seem to give any countenance to the obvious questions that people would ask.
Did you review the comments on the blog by I think it's not invented here against Logan?
No, I will do that.
Go check it out. And as I said, I've heard a lot of people criticizing his comments as being way overly simplistic, but not entirely wrong, just too simplistic to be relevant. And Jurist is posting an actual critique on what I think it's not invented here, what he said and why it's too simplistic, and you need to look at a lot of other factors. But also, Logan was beyond simplistic. So
that's what Jurist said?
Yeah, that's what he's been telling me on the telephone. I have not heard, I've not read his comment, but a lot of people have emailed me that not invented here is too simplistic. He's dismissing orbital science. His assumptions are too simplistic. And it's actually a pretty complex issue of refueling a rocket depending on where it comes from, where it's orbiting, where it needs to go. All sorts of different factors that get worked in as to whether it's going to be an economic venture, not an economic venture, save you time, not save you time. There's a whole bunch of real information missing. So
I'll look it over.
Look for
Dave,
it.
Dave, I've got a 2 p.m. Appointment I need to jump to, but let me just comment that. While Logan, you know, when he said he said the blatant statement of you can't go anywhere with chemical propulsion, and I'm thinking, you can't get to the moon? I mean,
yeah,
I think 1969 disproves that. But what I did is nobody has proprietary ownership of the rocket equation. When he said you can't get to Mars, and he said it blatantly, you can't get to Mars in 4 months and with refueling. And so I quickly jumped on the rocket equation calculator, and I put in the numbers for Starship. And it actually does. I mean, the numbers I came out with was almost exactly 4 months. So I had tried to find some other people who are more, true rocket scientists to look them up and see if they came to the same conclusion. Because Elon made that statement, and oftentimes on, like, NASA Watch, or is it Space Watch? Forum? Space Flight Forum. Oftentimes those guys will really dig into it and do the fact-checking. But I wasn't able to come up with it to confirm that my calculations were correct.
Well, see what Not Invented said, and then see what Jurist critiques, and then post your comments. And
Okay. Real
quick, I know you have to run. Jossie says, please remind Doug to review my presentation on mitigation of lunar dust for the Moon Society.
Thank you, John. I will do that. I'll put it on my to-do list right now.
Take care. I'll talk to you soon, Doug. Stay well.
Bye-bye.
Listeners, Dr. Doug is off the cell phone. We are at the two-hour point. If anybody else wants to participate and get the book, you got to do it real quickly. Otherwise, we'll call it a halt for open lines. One more time, the phone number, 1-866-687-7223. While we're waiting to see if there's any stragglers wanting to call us, remember there's only one show coming up from this point forward, and that is Tuesday with Rod Pyle and Tony on National Space Society's Day in Space, which is around the middle of July, and also a glimpse of ISDC 2021, assuming Los Angeles is open and safe to be in for the virus. That's unclear at this point. And there's no Hotel Mars, and there's no Friday show for the 4th of July, and no Sunday show for the 4th of July. And then we resume regular space show scheduling Tuesday of next week with Bob Zimmerman, and that is on the 7th. So we have a lot of shows coming up. July is almost full. We have only 2 days available in July. August is pretty wide open for new guests. September is still wide open for new guests. And then we will book the schedule for the balance of the year. Wow, this is a very strange year. I can't tell you it's a great year, but it is a very strange year. And it's moving very rapidly. And I sure hope it gets a lot better. A lot of states are slowing down opening, and they're locking down partially some of California again and closing some businesses like bars and stuff. You know, normally on the space show, I wouldn't make an appeal, but I will say this. There's a lot of people that are in, I'm just thinking they're kind of acting recklessly and without regard to others in their behavior out in the open, not keeping their distance, not using masks, just sort of defying the odds. And maybe you're young and maybe you're healthy, and maybe even if you get the virus, you might be pretty mildly affected for it. But there's other people, even people your age, that have complex health issues that you may not know about, that won't do well if you pass the virus on to them, or older people. So I really think we need to be a little bit more considerate of how we impact others, because this is not benign and harmless to everybody that gets it. And I think a little more thoughtfulness to other people, even if we think we're being real, real safe and careful, is in order. I know it worries me about my son, and I'm being extremely cautious, as a few of you know, and because of my age, and you know, I've been open about some of my health things and problems that I've had to kill the show for, and you know, because of this, that, or the other, and, you know, I've been treated or whatever, and you know, I don't want to be around people that are reckless, and you know, who knows if people are positive and asymptomatic or not. So people, just be considerate of other people and be and do what you need to do. It's about personal choice, and make personal choices that are positive. Even if you think it's ridiculous, maybe it is for you, but it's not ridiculous for the guy you're going to come across. Or the woman, or the older person, or something like that. That goes for being in stores like Safeway. I was in Walmart the other day in Rohnert Park, and I'm not going back to Walmart. I mean, that place was an absolute animal zoo. And it's just not a place I want to be. I did not feel secure there. I don't know anything about all the people that are there. It was packed full. The parking lot was packed full. There was no social distancing. Yes, everybody's wearing a mask, but big deal. They're bumping into you in the aisles. They're grabbing for the same package that you're grabbing on the shelf or the one next to it. It was the worst shopping experience I've had since the lockdowns in California started. So I won't be going back to Walmart. But the interesting thing about Walmart is it has more product than the other stores. So maybe I can mail order the product from Walmart. I don't know. But I just hope everybody stays safe and takes care of themselves and everyone else at the same time. Doesn't look like anybody else is going to call, so this is it for open lines today. We thank all of you who called, all of you who listened. Once again, excuse me, the code to get the book for archive listeners is, you need to tell me, send Robert's book. Thank you all for listening. A very happy July 4th week and weekend coming up next week. And back again on Tuesday with Rod and Tony, and programming with the National Space Society. Stay well, everybody. Keep looking up.